Sargon's legendary military exploits were remembered long after his rule, as later rulers tried to replicate his achievements. Sargon was the first king to unite northern and southern Mesopotamia. The image shows a mature man with a long beard that covers most of his face and splits at the bottom. The curly texture of the beard contrasts with the figure's smooth face. The ruler also has long hair, which is pulled back into a chignon and bound with a wide fillet or band, which is his only visible symbol of kingship. What is most memorable about his head are the eyes, which were originally inlaid with stone and shell that would give them a very lifelike appearance. The eyes were missing when the head was discovered and were probably gouged out in antiquity, perhaps even taken by some soldier ravaging a city who wanted to inflict more damage on the statue of the king. This ruler's image represents some of the horrors of warfare that Mesopotamian rulers conducted with regularity, and this too will be a topic that we will consider throughout the course. This iconic image of a strong ruler was one of the top 30 pieces placed on the Interpol list of objects missing from the Iraq Museum, before it was learned that members of the Department of Antiquities had hidden it in the National Bank of Iraq. It has since been recovered. We've seen in both the Uruk vase and in the Akkadian head that artistic creativity was displayed in Mesopotamia. Now let's turn to a more intellectual achievement in another example of an artifact from the Iraq Museum. One of the most important developments in Mesopotamia was the invention of writing in the late 4th millennium BC. Once it was created, writing was employed in many ways. We will find receipts of transactions, both large and small. Writing was used as a tool for rulers to conduct diplomacy with other kings, to govern provinces, or to issue orders to their army. Kings will also set down laws for their state in written form in the earliest law codes. On a more personal level, writing recorded the powerful emotion of love poems, prayers, and even magic spells to help prevent illness. These texts are preserved not on paper, but on palm-sized clay tablets, which was the main writing surface of the region. Because the texts were written on clay, which is not perishable, these texts are preserved when they're baked or hardened or even just dried out, and archaeologists recover from them evidence for politics, religion, economy, science, and culture. These tablets preserve a wide range of information about daily life, royal activities, and the interpretation of what these texts convey will be the focus of much of this course. For example, it may seem that economic texts are relatively straightforward, but we may not know if the industry is overseen by a temple, the palace, or one or more individuals. So if we think of a specific case, say a text reports a large flock of several hundred sheep and goats. Is this tribute sent to a king? Was it owned by a temple that used the wool for textile production? Did this large flock belong to a wealthy family? All of these distinctions make a difference in how we interpret the text. In another example of the challenges that are presented by the interpretation of these texts, official documents, which are our most abundant source of evidence for the history of the era, rarely describe a ruler or a city losing a war. Not everyone can win all the time, so we have to piece together the reality of the situation from other evidence. Kings will often claim to devastate a rebelling city and tear down its walls, giving the impression that they've completely obliterated the revolt. And yet, the next year they have to go back and do the very same thing again. From this, we understand that they really have not stamped out the revolt. So, even though the king always wins in the texts, We realize that sometimes he wins more decisively than others. Letters, both private and royal, survive for us in these cuneiform texts, and these would seem to be enormously helpful in understanding a specific period or subject. Imagine how exciting it would be to find a letter from a husband to a wife, or from one king to another king, and we can fill in some aspects of history from these personal documents. But these texts may not include a date, or they may use names that we don't recognize, so it becomes difficult to interpret their meaning fully. We might get other information from objects found with the text that can help us understand this a little bit better. If letters are found in what is clearly a private house, then we would interpret them much differently than if they were found in the archive of a palace. We will see examples of both of these in the course.